Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Labyrinth in the News. Today is the 22nd day of the Lunar Scorpion Moon of Challenge. Dali, Crown Chakra, White Lunar Mirror Day. The affirmation is, I polarize in order to reflect, stabilizing order. I seal the matrix of endlessness with the lunar tone of challenge. I am guided by the power of heart. It's also Gregorian calendar Monday, September 13th, 2010, my son's 26th birthday. Happy birthday, Zach. I'm your host, Christiana, coming to you live from the Couve. That's Vancouver, Washington, across the river from Portland, Oregon. The schedule for my show is now a little more fluid due to my other responsibilities and my guest schedules as well. So please check online both on the Blog Talk Radio website, which is www.blogtalkradio.com/ChristianaBTR, or the Labyrinth Network Northwest site, www.labyrinthnetworknorthwest.org. Those two sites, as well as my own site, turningtide-energetics.com, will have the most up-to-date schedules and times. So that's where you should check to check on that. My lead-in music is the first cut, Icos, short for icosahedron, the water symbol in sacred geometry, off of Susan Alexander's CD, Sequentia. If any of you would like to chat while we're on the air, please go to christiana-anea@blogtalkradio.com. Today should be a truly fun day as I have my guest on, a noted life development coach and certified labyrinth facilitator who is using the labyrinth combined with laughter in her work helping her individual clients and organizations counter the effects of stress. I am very pleased to welcome Linda Tourlucas to my show. Thank you, Linda, for joining me today. Oops, you know what? I pressed the wrong button, and she and I hung up on her. So hopefully she'll call right back in. I was too quick for my own good there. So she has got to call back, and here she is. Okay, let's try this again here. Hi, Linda. I'm sorry.
That happens.
Hey, we got a laugh already, didn't we?
Oh, it doesn't take much.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, did I pronounce your last name right? Tourlucas?
Oh, very good. Very good. Yes.
Okay, great. Well, I always ask my guests to talk a bit about their backgrounds and how they found labyrinths or the labyrinths found them. So what was the situation with you in your case?
Drama, stress, all kinds of things were happening in my family's life, and I had found my way into leadership. And it was at one of our final leadership courses that I met the labyrinth, and it met me. And amidst 600 other people, this was quite an intense energy that was going on, and I had the opportunity to walk this and find this amazement in walking, and I said, I must know more, and couldn't find anything in my area. So I started doing research. Where could I find more of these? And I found a few here and there, and I finally found Veriditas and the Labyrinth Society. And the rest is history, just going on and meeting Lauren Artress and taking her training to find out even more and reading books and going to Robert Ferre's workshop to learn how to build them and creating a number of labyrinths. And it's kind of after a while you feel like you're the close encounter of the third kind where you're drawing things out, and they become pretty intense. And I just found it a personal journey for quite a while where I explored it, and I was getting into the coaching angle of it. And so I thought the two of them were a really nice combination because I was doing my own personal growth through walking the labyrinth every day. And I took on the Labyrinth Society's 365-day challenge where you would walk every day. And it's a little bit of a challenge, but right in fitting with my leadership, that could I make that commitment? And I surely did, and I had such a wonderful experience of looking at the metaphors of my own life and then seeing them in the clients that came in to work with me as well. And soon after, laughter was added, and it's the combination of language, laughter, and the labyrinth that helped me move to help other people move.
Okay, Linda, I have a little bit of a funkiness with the microphone. Are you, how are you hooked up to this? Are you talking directly?
You're on my microphone in my headphones.
Okay, all right. I think you're a little bit too close to your mic because it's getting a reverb, like a wind blowing and a popping. So if you could maybe just move the mic a little bit further away from your mouth, then maybe we'll get a more, that's better, way better. Great.
Oh, good. Oh, no problem.
Okay, great, because and then you were getting really, really loud and then little and then soft, so we want that even and the, not the popping, so that's perfect. Okay, so you have three websites, the Park Ridge Hysterical Society, HYSTERICAL, which is www.parkridgelaughter.com, Follow the Laughter Workshops, which is www.followthelaughter.com, and You Can Say Yes Motivational Guidance Services at www.youcansayyes.com. How did these websites come about, and how I've gone onto all three, and you have been chock-a-block full of all sorts of stuff. You have to give them a lot of attention. How do you do that every day? And so talk a little bit about these websites and how they came about.
I have even more websites than that. You forgot laughingchicago.com.
Oh, I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
Well, for me, that wasn't a problem because I had gone back to school to think I could try to, in some way, keep up with my children and the emerging technology that was in the late 80s and the early 90s. And so I wanted to stay a little ahead of them, or at least being able to be somewhat fluent with my own kids. And so as I got into I got into technology and hadn't planned it because I really like graphic design, but I really was intrigued by it. So I got into web development, and I made web pages, and so for me it's quick and simple and pretty easy to do. So I put everything where I'm hoping it's all presenting well. I know how to look at it and evaluate some of it, and so I think it's pretty easy for me to just update things when I have the whim, but it also takes that ability to stay focused on what I'm doing and make the time and commitment to it, and so the knowing how really helps.
So tell us a little bit about these different websites and what are they for, and do they direct you towards the labyrinth in any way when you go on them, and which ones do, et cetera?
Well, there is one called Labyrinth Lessons, which I've still not done, and I started it a while back, but for some reason I just put it aside. There's also the Heartland Labyrinth Circle, which is a group I started a foundation with two other women, and we wanted to bring the people together that were in Illinois, and they were all over the place, and we went to one of the Labyrinth Society gatherings, and I said, well, there's 22 people on this list. We must get them together, and that was the start of it. And so I've been maintaining the web page for our group, and it's helpful because I can send out email information to what's happening and when our group meets and new events and ideas and even ask questions. So it's very helpful. How these all came about was You Can Say Yes, obviously, was the first one because that is my life development and leadership website, and that talks about my coaching. It talks about some of the programs I run and workshops that I do and trainings. And then I got into building the Labyrinth one, and they really never finished it, and I guess there must be more purpose, so I just let it go and said, when it finishes, it finishes, and I'll have it out there for people. Part of the reasoning, too, is that I could not take a pilgrimage I wanted to take on the Camino de Santiago, and just it didn't work out for me in the particular time. I wanted to walk it in my 50th year, and I couldn't do it in the time I wanted to. But my husband had come along and said, well, this is September. If you wait till May, I'll go with you. So, of course, after I fell off the couch, I picked up the pen and signed him up. And then we both went in May, which was still in my 50th year and my 51st, so I actually spent my birthday on the Camino. How that translates to this webpage was part of it is because I could not go in September when I wanted to, I did a pilgrimage of Illinois. And I went to visit all of the different labyrinths that I could find and just found the amazing stories behind them, the builders, the community that put the, why they used them, how they used them purposely, the different kinds of things. And I also discovered a lot about my own hometown. So I always encourage take a pilgrimage in your own backyard as a result of that. And that's what's going to go on the Labyrinth Lessons website. As far as the laughter goes, I introduced the Park Ridge Hysterical Society because I'm a certified laughter yoga instructor, and I took a leader's course first, and when I came back home, one of the purposes is that would help you build your own practice of doing laughing is to create a laughter club. And in India, they are prominent. Probably about 2,000 to 5,000 laughter clubs are in India alone, and they do laughing every day. Well, I can get it done once a week here, and pretty much in the States, that's a lot to ask, and that's where we actually find them. So that's our laughter club that not only includes laughter, it just develops the humor being, and people meet. We do laughter exercises, but we also do a sense of playfulness, and we do games and all kinds of different ideas. So once a month we'll have a fun event where people can get together just to play and be remembering, forget the stress and have fun. And once a week we meet for laughter club activities. And so it's sometimes laughter sessions, laughter meditations, all kinds of things to bring up the joy. And then finally, every single day of the year I do a laughter call where I host a call for 20 minutes. And been doing that for 2.5 years. And so it's be interesting to take a look at my brain on laughter. And the follow the laughter is, that is my, I had to differentiate. One was my play site. Follow the laughter became my workshop trainings, things that I did for funds for money. The other, the laughter, Park Ridge Hysterical Society, would be all of my pretty much free events. So people could see the difference.
No, I see. So, you know, people, I mean, you talked about the differences in India, which is very much because of its culture and its Asian religions, which are very different from Western civilization, you know, from Christianity. So there's a huge difference in how people are, especially adults. And people here in the West and Westerns can be somewhat condescending about the importance and positive effect of laughter on the human psyche, because we relate like uncontrolled laughter to childishness or naivete or, you know, something inappropriate. You know, people forget how to be, have that childlike sense of life. So how do you explain the role of laughter in the healing process or the maintenance of health to people, to especially us Westerners?
Oh, sure. Well, I agree with you. There are a lot of people that I come up against that actually think we're being silly, that we're wasting time, that there's serious work to be done. And what happens is that there's an overt case of seriousness in the world where people have forgotten playfulness. not silliness, but more likely playfulness about finding that inner spirit of laughter, that inner spirit of joy. You see, because people tend to go for a happy recollection. They want to be happy. And that's generally predicated on an event happening and then they can be happy. But joy is an essence. Joy is a being that we want to develop in our lives, because then when we reach for those hard places, we can reach for joy and it helps us get through them a little bit easier. And we don't see things, how serious is this, is one of the things we will say is, why am I looking at it this way when I could just breathe in and exhale laughter and maybe it will shift my mind, and how can I change some of that? I've worked with government workers who were very highly stressed, and I use this as stress relief. Sometimes I'll call that stress management because they don't necessarily understand the language. In our labyrinth talk as facilitators, we often have to talk to different groups, and so we have to learn to speak the language they're speaking so that we can communicate effectively, because there isn't really a good or bad way to do anything. There just simply is a effective or non-effective, and is it an efficient way we're working? So that's where some of the language that I use comes in.
Great. So give me an example of if you go into, say, you're incorporating the labyrinth with this laughter work, you know, why did you think it was a good fit to combine these two? And give me an example of you going into like a corporation. Do you bring labyrinth into a corporate setting?
So far, it's been mostly workshops and public settings that I will incorporate the laughter into it. I usually will do it in a workshop kind of theme where the labyrinth and the laughter sort of come together organically, where I'm not saying, okay, laugh here. I don't want to do that with anybody. I think they got to have enough rules, and the idea is to have more fun with it. This originally started for me in Chartres when I was in France, and I was one of the Veritas Travels, and I was there. And I think it was just my playful nature found a way to walk on the labyrinth every day, and every time I'd come back to our little classroom setting, I'd be smiling, saying, I walked it again. Well, maybe I walked the lunations, or maybe the chairs one time when I walked in were moved. And so I was finding the fun in it as I was going, because I wasn't going to be defeated by these chairs when I was in France to partake of this labyrinth. So I found different ways to walk it every day, and I was very pleased with myself. Along the way, I met a most amusing woman, and she was just as amused as I was. And so we found that one day we were walking on the labyrinth, and there was just a little bit of a giggle that popped up from her and myself. And if you've ever been there, there are these very loose little pieces of stone, and I happened to pick one up. And as she was passing, I just gave one to her, which elicited all kinds of laughter out of her. But she was holding it in a respectful way, which made me hold it in. And the two of us were, well, if you've ever had to try to hold it in, try is the operative word, it doesn't work very well. So we were snickering, going around, keeping it in as much as we could. And by the time we got to the center, I didn't know she was there and she did not either. And we turned around and saw each other. And that's the thing about laughter, is it's very contagious. And so as soon as we looked at each other, we burst out laughing. Well, there's nothing else we could do but just be in the moment of it and enjoy it. And from that point, I felt laughter belonged on the labyrinth too. Sometimes when people are doing walks in reverence, I want to respect where they're at. The same thing that when I'm working in any particular group or organization, I want to respect the boundaries they have. I want to respect the understanding, and I want to slowly impart a new way to open up and try something new and just explore it and just have a little discovery with it, because nobody wants to be told what to do. So that's how it sort of emulated. And when I use the laughter, I'll start people on the edge of it and then bring them to the center slowly. And the same thing goes within the body. We're going internally to find our laughter, just to remember it. Some people, all I have to say is the word laughter, and they forget how long it's been since they've laughed, and then they burst out. They can't help it. there's no right or wrong way on our labyrinth, so there doesn't happen to be that way with the laughter either. And that's the beauty of how similar these two things can affect one. The laughter just gets you there quicker to the center of your being than maybe the walk might, but both have their benefits.
Do you use labyrinths, now do you see people individually, individual clients as well?
Yes. Yes.
And do you use labyrinths for individual?
Absolutely. In a variety of ways. Sometimes my clients will come in and they've got us going on and they really have to get something out. And I realize they're just, this could take a long time. So what I'll do is invite them to sit in front of the labyrinth and put their hands on it. And maybe I'll put a little melody of music on and I'll just kind of get out of their way. And then I'll let them finger walk. And then they're done, they're relaxed, they feel better, and then they get right to the point, we get focused, we have intention, and we move forward, and it makes the whole session move with intention very quickly and more intensely. And other times when something will come up, I'll ask them about, look at the labyrinth, and I'll use it as a tool, a visual tool, and we talk about the metaphors that come up. Or other times we'll be working on a problem and then walk the labyrinth and then just have a discussion about what came up and how that applied to what we were talking about.
So do you, where you have your business, you have, you said, you mentioned finger labyrinths. You have wooden finger labyrinths available for your clients?
Oh, tons, yes. But when I go out and do a workshop, I'll use them as well. Sometimes we find people who, maybe it's children, it's a wonderful tool for children because they just want to be busy and it's a great thing to get them active. And then maybe we have seniors or someone who's a little older and cannot necessarily walk as conveniently as everybody else and maybe sitting is where they want to be. And so it's a wonderful tool to allow them to just be part of the experience as well.
And do you have, are they the single ones or are they ones like Neil Harris makes with his relax, the double labyrinths that can be used?
I have everything.
Hands?
Yeah, I have everything. I have some of, I have Elisa Gidrose. I have one of her big ones now that she has the dancing labyrinth. And I have, Neil lives in here not far, so I have a couple of his. And then I have some small, very fat, flat ones from, Peaceful Endeavors, and then just ones that I've picked up along the way, and they're very interesting shapes and ideas, and then very classical ones. And they're made out of a variety of different materials because people, the tactile experience can be a change for people too. Sometimes somebody's really stuck on something, so I'll give them a smooth surface to use, and that seems to help them glide and feel a little bit more confident in what they're doing. And the labyrinth can elicit that confidence just as laughter does.
That's very interesting. That's a very interesting point, that you would actually you would actually find that relation between where they are emotionally or and the type of the feel of the labyrinth. That's very interesting. I don't think I've ever had any guest yet mention that kind of thing, although maybe others would have, but no one has yet. So that's wonderful to hear. So you also mentioned that you'll have people walk the labyrinth. So at your place of business, you have one that's outside that people can walk on?
No, I have a canvas. It's the 12-foot petite chart design, and it's perfect for small spaces if I go into a corporate boardroom or if I just have a small group setting where I'll have group coaching. Then I can use that as a tool, and people can go as they want. I also have the finger labyrinth, so everybody has choice. I think there's a lot of feeling that we don't have choice, and this I always like to make sure that there's plenty of choices available so that when something works one way, try it another way and then just see what the difference in the experience is. And sometimes there's a big value in doing that as well.
Do you have any preferences with the type of labyrinth that you use, or you just try to give people a choice of what they want to experience?
Sometimes I listen to what they're talking about, and I personally have had my own little evolution through the labyrinth. And so while I enjoyed the Cretan, the classical one, and that's the one I put in my backyard because it was about my family, that made sense for that setting. And then I found the value and the amazement of the shark design, and I really love that. So I have a little small design in a garden with that. And so I will use those. But I can find the different ways they're appreciated, or if somebody really needs to do a lot of movement, I'll look at, do they need to do a lot of shifting? Well, maybe I'll have them walk the charts over the Cretan design. But the one that I found that I really loved, and that I found when people are kind of stuck and they need a little bit more movement and they need freedom, the Baltic wheel. That one seems to elicit a lot of movement in it. And I think that from what I found, I also watch what happens with people, and I've seen that that one seems to be a very nice tool for someone who really wants more freedom and really wants to be in the moment of feeling. When they feel like dancing or when they feel like they just really need a move, I found that one works really well.
Can you, now I don't think I've ever had this come up on the on any of my shows either, so would you mind explaining what that Baltic design is? How many circuits is it?
It can be different. It can be a 7, it could be 9, it could be 11, something in the odd numbers. And the interesting part about a Baltic wheel, generally it looks like, well, I have one that has just the one entry path, and it has a lot of circular movement in it. And you'll just continue to go around many times before you make a turn, and then again around many times, and you tend to spiral into the center.
Oh, okay. So the Baltic one that you're talking about, do you have a canvas of that, or is it in the ground somewhere that you've used, or a permanent one?
No, that one I simply have. I have a wheatgrass design, which I think is really very beautiful. It's made of wheat, and I really like that aspect about it because it has that greening quality, and it's green. And then I have a few wooden ones in that design and a couple of plastic ones.
And so explain a little bit, I'm really curious about more specifically how you work laughter into your workshops. Can you first of all, talk about how you decide what the structure of each workshop will be. What is your process? Once someone's called you and said, yes, I want you to come and do a workshop for us, this is what's going on, this is our organization, what is your process as far as creating a workshop specifically for that venue, integrating the laughter or into the topic?
Oh, sure. When I talk to the individual, or maybe it's to several individuals, I spend some time with them to find out why it is they want to use this particular tool or modality. Sometimes it's just about talking about laughter. Other times it's talking about the labyrinth. And when I talk to them, I find out what it is that's going on in their company. What's your stress level? What's happening within your organization that you've called forth some of this, or that you would like this? What's interesting to, maybe is it the individual that sees this and feels something within their company could benefit by this? And so the listening is what really tells me how I'm going to operate and how I'm going to move, because there's not always, I really rarely do something twice. It's always different. And it's the uniqueness of people who call forth. And sometimes someone will talk about that there's a high level of stress. And so we might have a little bit more extra time. And so I might introduce the two of these elements of laughter and the labyrinth separately and then put them at the end. So I might start out with something as simple as the labyrinth walk to get a clarity of purpose of what we're going to do and just really identify what's going on in the body, and so they can feel that. A lot of people do not necessarily hone or identify or acknowledge what's going on in their body, and then they're not reading or listening to it. It's telling them things and they're not paying attention. And so this way I ask them to take a look at it, pay attention to it. Then when they come off, they really have an identity about where maybe their stress is or where maybe their anxieties, or sometimes I'll ask them to find where their joy is. And they can come off and actually touch a part on their body where it is. then we'll actually then take the idea of laughter, and I'll have them gather around the outside so that they can all look at each other, because that eye contact is very helpful. And then we'll do some breathing exercises to bring them to the idea, because nobody wants to jump right in and laugh unless I do. And usually when I start, they start. And the other part is after they do that, I have them kind of intermove the muscles on their face and just remember what a smile feels like. And so we'll kind of exercise our face a little bit and get some smile going there. And so for really highly stressed groups, sometimes they're already diving in and laughing, so I just follow the flow of what's happening, and I don't ever want to stop the laughter, because how many times in our life have we been told to stop laughing? So mm-hmm. what we do then is just let it come out, and then we use laughter as exercises, and we use them really about what they're telling me their stress level is. So I'm creating a laughter exercise about that. And sometimes we're just playing on the labyrinth, going back and forth. Maybe we'll do a handshake in laughter, greeting another person on the other side, and just adding a ha-ha-ha to our handshake. And that can elicit a lot of laugh. Just simple little addition of ha-ha-ha can make a difference. Other times I'll show them where they find their laughter. We primarily have three sounds in laughter, ha-ha, ho-ho, and hee-hee. And so I'll actually ask them to find that in their body. And so, you know, and if you do that backwards, you get ah-ah-oh-oh-ee-ee, ah-ah-ah-ah. Yeah, and so laughter kind of evolved from, you know, that's the natural part of it, and sometimes it gets us out of our seriousness.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. It sounds like a very a lightening up process.
That's a gradual process for a group that maybe is a little unsure. Other groups, we could just start out, and maybe I'll have them walk, and at every turn, I'll ask them to say, ha, ha, ha. And what happens is every time they say that, they giggle a little bit more, and by the time they're in the center, they're all, you know, there's enough people going, ha, ha, ha. And they can't help then but laugh, and I just let it organically evolve. These are people that just, you know, maybe they know how to do it, and I just say, go ahead and do it. So lots of ways to do it. I just kind of listen really and observe, and then I make decisions based on what I'm finding.
Can you share some stories of I mean not with not naming names but of the effects, the benefits that these kinds of workshops have been for some of your clients or groups?
Yeah, I understand the
you
no
must
name
have
policy.
Good story. Yeah.
Oh, I have wonderful stories. There's the person who told me they can't laugh, and then they're the ones on the floor rolling around laughing. We have something called laughter meditation, and it's truly, this is a really wonderful thing, and there's hardly anything you have to do, and it's about watching and holding the space for them while they're in it. And the laughing meditation can be done in a number of ways, but one of the best ways to allow people a real release in their bodies is to have them lay flat on their back, and if they could put their heads in a diamond shape on the floor, or in a circle shape on the floor, so about 8 heads together, what happens is they hear the quality of the laughter next to them, and then that keeps them going. That contagious nature takes over. The thing about this is, the laughter is a beautiful experience of oxygenation in the body. We really only use about 1 liter of our 5 available liters, and the other 4 have a lot of stale air in them. And unless you're a marathon runner, you're not getting that stale air moved and pumped throughout the body. But laughter can do that. And in a really wonderful thing like this laughter meditation, it's just somebody starts, and then it rolls up, and it keeps going, and it goes and goes and goes until they want it to die down. And simply I hold the space. I watch for anybody who might be having fits or go out of a little bit of control. Rarely does that happen as well. We always caution people ahead of time that we're going to squeeze the inner abdominal muscles. And so if, you know, I have to go to the bathroom, we don't have a laugh to your leak policy. Which sometimes they don't listen to me, and I see them, like, crossing their legs, walking, getting down the hallway fast, you know. That's kind of some of the fun. There are people the one woman said, I cannot believe you got the CEO up here. And I had everybody up. And, you know, here's the thing. Sometimes I have to go on after some serious stuff. In Florida, when I was down there, I had to, and I won't say where, I had to speak after a conversation about pedophilia in schools. And so the group was really heavy, but it's okay. I worked that out, you know, and I kind of came to the story of, hey, we're there. I had a woman on my laughter call that morning talking to me about that she was getting more confident by laughing, and she had an abusive husband, and he was threatened by that. And I said, okay, so I'm going to get a hotline here, because sometimes that happens, and you can get the help you need in the local area you need, because if you've got a son in the house, you don't want to take that chance. And she didn't, but she felt so empowered by the laughter that it gave her confidence to go ahead and do some things, and it was really putting him out of place. So I told that story to this group, and that group then felt a relation, and then they relaxed into what I talked about. And when I asked them to come on up and join me, they all did. One time I was in West Virginia, and I was so inspired by this one young guy who had flown to Chicago to take my training, and he had gone back, and he started a laughter club in his high school, and at the end of the year he asked me to come out, and I thought about it, and I said, oh yes, I'll come out. So I did, and he had about 300 students, and when he walked in the room, they all stood up and clapped. They were so amazed by him. I'm not sure what it was, but they really loved him, and I just got goosebumps. So I was standing there next to him, and I was to do the presentation about what all this laughter is about, and he did his research on his finding for a all-year-long senior project. And as he finished his talk, they just stood up again. And so I talked to them, and I got the feeling that these kids wanted to have more involvement. And so I said, so if a few of you want to come up on stage. They all came up. We had them on the stage. We had them on the ground. We had them on the platform. He led some. I led some. And then we just, I said, this is your call. And so I just supported him in what I trained him to do, and he did a wonderful job. And it's when people hear you're here to talk about laughter, it's like a news media will come out, too, and they all want to know, what's this laughter? What is this? It's so strange. They're so used to reporting such negativity in the media that when they hear laughter, they want to know what's going on and what are you doing. And my daughter, Beth, she said they're just jealous. And I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, they want some of it. I mean, how could you not want some of that? It makes you young, you know?
Oh, absolutely. It does. And it's good for your complexion. Oh, my.
Right, you don't have to use any of those machines. You just laugh.
You do, and I don't know how many people have said they're off medication. One of our teachers has Parkinson's, and as a result of laughter, she no longer takes any medication. So this is the beauty.
Oh, my golly.
I hear so many amazing stories like that, people who have gotten over depression, people who, a woman with bipolar, she's, now see, laughter does not cure these things, but laughter puts you in the ultimate different mood, a more powerful, engaging mindset, and you're more willing to take on the things that will do. Like some people said, well, you can lose weight with laughing and laugh it off. And I said, well, you can laugh off some of your stress, but I'm here to say you don't lose weight. If you want to intentionalize that with something, laugh and do something, then guess what? It will be much more beneficial for you. And I actually am going to start a program like that to prove that, so that we're not giving misinformation about what laughter is and does. But it's simply really amazing. It amazes the mind. It brings up the endorphins of the runner's high, and it takes the stress of cortisol and it lowers it. And so the body can resume a balance and become in a natural state. So instead of being the normal, we go with the natural.
Okay, so we only have a few, we're getting running short of time here. I can't believe this, but so I want you to talk a little bit, quick shift to your concurrent workshop that you're going to be presenting at the Labyrinth Society Gathering this year in New Harmony, Indiana in November. It's on Saturday, November 13th, one of the concurrent workshops. Can you tell us a little bit about what the topic is, specifically for this event?
Well, it's really easy. I like to keep things simple because as humans, we tend to complicate things awful lot. So I called it Laughter on the Labyrinth. And we'll let it evolve and be where it is. And some of it I have planned. And the other part is, who is it that shows up? Because I don't know. That's when I don't know the situations. So I have to be flexible and go with the flow. And I have to have some different plans in mind to go to one or the other. And the beauty of laughter is you just become very flexible. You don't get bent out of shape that way.
Yeah. Well, the little blurb that you sent in for your proposal, since I do the PR stuff for it, I have access to this information. It mentioned that this workshop is very much for seasoned labyrinth facilitators, people who've been working out there who are sort of maybe tending to take themselves really, really seriously, whole laughter ministry or whatever too seriously, and getting really sort of bogged down in being very serious and intentional about whatever their labyrinth work is. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. We all tend to want to give reverence to this amazing tool that we've found in our lives, and so we tend to hold it in a space. And one thing I found with people is when they make somebody more important than something, then when that somebody becomes human, they throw out the whole message. And the same thing goes with the labyrinth. If we make it so important instead of the message that it brings us, that we get very overly serious about it. And so that's really going to be my overlying message, because we are actually going to be doing this with seasoned labyrinth facilitators, like you said. And if they can find some joy spot and to realize and to maybe allow, because one word I hear often is walk with soft eyes, we're really aiming to get into acceptance. And if you open your body and you throw back your head and you laugh, well, you are fully into acceptance. And when you cross your body, it's more like the stress mode, and that's more judgmental. So if we can shift that, which we can with laughter and the labyrinth and a consciousness of both, well, hallelujah. We'll have a good time.
Sounds great. Do you have any other events planned for this fall prior to the gathering, afterward? What are your plans?
Ooh. Well, I have just been crazy this week, having been at the Theosophist, the Theosophical Society's event. So I came off of that. I'm doing some private walks with individuals. I, as a laughter yoga teacher, I'm actually doing a training on the 30th and the 1st, and then followed by 2 days of what we call Laugh Fest in the Midwest on October 2nd and 3rd, which we will have a labyrinth at. Because why not? It's there. So we'll be doing all kinds of presentations, ideas, movement, laughter, different ideas. It's open to everyone, and it's in the Chicago area and in the O'Hare area. And that's our big thrust. And then after that, we have I have a few laughter sessions, labyrinth sessions, and they're all just with different groups and organizations.
So you live in the Chicago area?
Yeah, I'm in the area near O'Hare Airport.
Oh, okay. Well, my daughter lives in Bucktown.
Oh, sure. Will you tell her about our Laugh Fest?
I will.
She can come
out
and immerse herself in it. Yeah.
I'm going to definitely do that, for sure. So how do you see your life's work evolving over the next few years, given what's going on the planet and your being a laughter emissary of laughter?
It has opened up amazing paths, and you just have to get out of the way and allow the things to happen and enjoy the process you're on. And that's what I've been doing, and I've been surprised because I thought I was in control. And what I can do is just follow along. I have been developing so many programs. Like, I was just in New Mexico in the prison, and so we did laughter with the inmates I came along to see what it was like, because I want to set up a program for at-risk youth and to show them joy is possible. Then you can make that choice, and to show them these exercises that they can do at any single time. You don't even have to carry them around. So that's a beautiful way to put those things together. So I just want to do that. I think the idea of having a training with couples will bring the labyrinth into that as well. And so that I've trained one member of the family, now let me train the other, and let's see if we can have a little couples retreat with the labyrinth and laughter as well. Just the different variants. I'm always interested in the women's movement because one of my leadership missions is until every woman knows her worth. And so I always use it in that particular, when I have the opportunity to speak with women's groups, is to use the tool of them, of both. One, walk your path, and the other is laugh and enjoy it while you go. So I see
some of those
evolving.
Well, it sounds great, and you're so enthusiastic, and it's great to listen to you. I can't wait to meet you in November, and I will definitely tell my daughter. We are out of time, so thank you so much for joining me today. It's my intention to enlighten labyrinth neophytes and support labyrinth veterans with guests like you who provide a depth of information and personal experience not available through other sources. So many, many blessings on your path.
Thank you for having me. It's been a joy.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to Labyrinths in the News in the live category on blogtalkradio.com with your host, Christiana. Join me on September 27th at 1:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and my guest will be Dr. Diane Rudebach, another of the concurrent workshop presenters and a registered nurse, associate professor at the University of Oklahoma, and a certified labyrinth facilitator. Join us as we discuss her work with labyrinths in Oklahoma and her topic for the gathering on the research she and her colleague Carol Knife compiled about common themes experienced by labyrinth walkers. Have a blessed week in Lakesh.